Right. Okay, so we are now looking at the Zohar. This is our second session, and we're using Rabbi Moshe Miller's selection and translation and annotation of the Zohar from Bereshit, volume 1. And we have reached, he's got many pages of introduction, and that's why we began at page 100 and something. So we're on page 143, which is near the end of the first batch of pages, and it's at the bottom of the page. Page 143.
At the bottom.
Yes, it's printed on both sides. Do you have it, Michael?
So at the bottom, God created?
God created. Okay, does everyone have it?
Yeah.
Yes? Okay, so Millie, if you'd like to start.
In Hebrew?
There's no Hebrew. No Hebrew. No. Yeah. You see, the Zohar is in Aramaic. The Zohar is in Aramaic. So, we were to read it in Aramaic...
The entire Zohar was written in Aramaic?
The entire Zohar is written in Aramaic, yes.
Yeah. God created 7 supernal days upon which he planted and built worlds. And that is why it is written, states, literally, God made the heavens 6 days. Sheshet Yamin.
Yes. Sheshet Yamin asa Hashem et Hashamayim. That's right. And you see, it doesn't say, go on, and not.
And not in 6 days. Besheshet Yamin.
See, you would expect the verse to say, Besheshet Yamin. In 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth. Mm-hmm. But in fact, it says Sheshet Yamim, just like that. 6 days.
That's right, yes.
What are supernal days?
Ah, well, these are the Sefirot. Mm-hmm. That's what the Zohar means. These are the spiritual emanations, which we now generally call the Sefirot. Mm-hmm. But the Zohar often calls them the days. The 6 days, and then the 7th day, which is Malchut, kingship.
So what would be the other 3?
Well, they are on a higher level.
On a higher level.
That's a very good question, because there are 3 higher sefirot, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge.
Yes.
Chochmah, Binah, Da'at.
Yeah.
But the Zohar is here talking only about the 7 lower sefirot. Right, go on.
He planted and built worlds in plural.
One second. Yes, worlds in the plural.
Yes.
That's the first insight of the Kabbalah.
About people, we're talking about worlds.
That there are different levels of world. And it doesn't mean that on the Mars is a world. If there are people on Mars, or whether or not there are people on Mars, Mars is part of our world. This is the world, the physical world. Beyond this physical world is the spiritual realm called the world of action, the world of Asiya. So we are at the physical end of a vast spiritual realm called the world of action. And then there is a higher level called the world of Yetzira, formation.
Is this the expression, what's below is above? Below.
That's another concept. Okay. The idea that there's a comparison of the upper realms and the lower realms. But here it's talking about this world and several other worlds. We normally talk of 4 worlds of the Kabbalah. The 4 worlds. And these worlds are created by means of the 6 days, which are the 6 Sefirot. So there's 6 and then 7. There's the 7 days. So the 7 days includes Shabbat. So there's the 6 days of creation and then Shabbat. So there we have the set that we were speaking about of divine qualities, divine emanations needed to create the world, right? So now let's go into the next concept, corresponding.
Corresponding to these 7 supernal days, he created 7 righteous men, men of truth, who sustain these days and illuminate them. each corresponding to his supernal day. And he planted each one of these seven in the generation that was fitting for him. They are the forefathers of the world: Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aaron, and David. Note that these seven saintly men have been listed in chronological order. However, corresponding to the Sefirot, the Zohar arranges them as follows: Abraham Chesed, Yitzchak Gvura, Yaakov Tiferet, Moshe Netzach, Aharon Hod, Yosef Yesod, David Malchut.
Right.
How beautiful. All makes sense now.
Yes, it's a very profound and beautiful concept. Mm. These seven tzaddikim, these seven righteous men, they have incredible spiritual influence on our lives, and we inherit their teachings and inspiration. And they are actually the seven in the order that the editor, Moshe Miller, who translated and edited this book that we're reading from, which is Selections from the Zohar. So he's put them in the order on which we are familiar with them for the Ushbizin of Sukkot. Mm-hmm. Because there's the concept that these seven spiritual tzaddikim come to join us. Ushbizin means guests. Mm-hmm. They come to join us in our Sukkah. And so the first night of Sukkot and the first day is Abraham and then Yitzchak and so on. So those are the seven, and they're in the order of the seven Sefirot. So Malchut is the seventh, the last. And Yosef, the important change is Yosef. Mm-hmm. Yosef chronologically comes between Yaakov and Moshe, because he's the son of Yaakov. But as a Sefira, he's the Sefira Yesod. And Yesod comes after Moshe and Aaron, between Aaron and David. So it's out of chronological order, but that is the spiritual order. So in this passage in the Zohar lists them in chronological order. And the editor is pointing out that elsewhere we find them in a different order, corresponding to the different Sefirot, and that they correspond to these Sefirot.
Isn't it interesting that they all married non-Jewish women? Moshe, I don't know about Aharon, but not all. So Yosef,
well, Abraham married someone as Jewish as him.
Yes, that's different. Yes, absolutely. And
Yitzchak married Rebecca, who was also, and he only married one wife.
That's right. He's the only one that married one wife.
Well, I think Yosef also only married one wife.
And he's supposed to have married Potiphar's.
Moshe only married one wife.
Tzipora was his wife? No.
Yeah, Moshe's wife was Tzipora. Now, you see, there's in Bahalotecha, it says that Miriam and Aaron spoke about the Ethiopian woman who Moshe married.
That's right.
So you could say, oh, that was another woman. But according to Rashi and Ibn Ezra and other commentators, it's the same one woman. It's Tzipora. That was his wife. Only she's called the Ethiopian woman.
No, Isha Kushit.
Isha Kushit, yeah.
Why did you say Ethiopian then?
Kushit is
Well, Kushi means Ethiopian. Ibn Ezra says she was called Kushit because she was dark, because she was a Midianite, and the Midian women or people.
I thought because she came from Kush.
Well, Kush.
Yeah, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah, but Rashi says she was called Kushit as a kind of a way of avoiding the evil eye. If someone's very beautiful, you say the not beautiful person. But
so Tzipora was the one.
Yes, yeah, so in other words, the standard interpretation is that Moshe only married one wife and Yitzchak only married one wife. And I think Aaron only had one wife.
And Yaakov wanted to marry one
and
wife.
And Yosef only had one. Yeah, you're right. Yaakov wanted to marry one. Didn't come out.
And David made up for that.
That's right. Yes, the last one.
But we did say that David was a token. They were only his token wives.
No, no, you're thinking of King Solomon.
Oh, so King Solomon.
King Solomon.
David married, David married.
No, King David had 18 wives.
Yes.
But King Solomon had 1,000.
Yeah, but they were symbolic.
Well.
So basically.
I don't think they were symbolic, they were real people.
They were real, of course they were real, but yes. It was to hold a connection to Israel.
Yes, they wanted the connection to Israel, Solomon's wives. It was a sense of a feeling of the whole world coming together and connecting, and a princess from that country marrying the king of Jerusalem was a way of uniting the whole world.
I find it fascinating, but why is David here and not Shlomo? Of the two of them, he was the biggest sinner, wasn't he, David?
You know, there's the Hasidic perspective.
Sorry, I'm terrible.
There's the Hasidic perspective, which I heard once, a talk given by a very interesting lady. in Chabad today, there's a very great scholar called Rabbi Yoel Tan. And he in fact was in this conference in the Center for Jewish History two weeks ago. A very, very remarkable figure. And his wife is also remarkable. So she once gave a talk about King David. And this was a fascinating talk. She took the context. I mean, the sin that you're referring to is Bathsheba.
Uriah and Bathsheba. This is killing somebody.
So she discussed the whole lead up to this and looking at it in the context of the Tanakh, of what the Bible is saying at that point. He was conducting a war. He was in the middle of a battle against the Moabites, the king of Moab, which was a people that, in fact, the Jewish people would not conquer until the time of the Messiah. And nonetheless, they were engaged in this battle. And if they didn't conquer the Moabites would conquer them. And it was a very dangerous situation. And it was necessary that because they could only be conquered in the time of the Messiah, it was necessary, as seen by King David, that the soul of the Messiah should come into the world. Now the Messiah is a descendant of King David. That's what the Rambam says, the Talmud says. The Messiah is a descendant of King David. So that means he has to bring into the world the soul of the Messiah. And for this, he needs the right woman. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, he sees the right woman.
What happened to the other woman that he had? They were not the right
woman. Well, they weren't the right ones for bringing the Messiah into the world.
But Bathsheba was not Jewish either.
She was Jewish. She was.
Was she Jewish?
Yeah.
He needs a very good lawyer, doesn't he? So you're saying this Joe from the is the Hasidic lawyer to get involved.
I like the story. It's very good. Yeah.
So he saw that this was the woman who was needed to bring the soul of the Messiah into the world, and he took her, and she became pregnant, and she had a baby. And the baby got ill and died. But that baby was the soul of the Messiah. And while that baby was there, the war was able to be won against the king of Moab. And the end of the story is that his general, Yoav, comes with the crown of the king of Moab and puts it on David's head. So when you look at the whole story,
yes,
it's a cosmic story.
Right.
So David is a dramatic figure who is able to pull that off.
And also his ancestor Ruth.
This was all true. This piece of research is Leah Kahn's own research, exploring this in Kabbalistic texts and Hasidic texts. A very fascinating person.
Yes. But also his ancestor, the female, is Ruth.
Yes, well, Ruth.
Again,
yeah,
another one who was not born a Jewess. She did convert, though.
Yes, she converted.
Whether born or not, because you can convert and then you're Jewish.
Mind those days.
No, I'm just putting things in my head in some order.
All right. So there we have these very special seven figures. Now, I mentioned that these are the Ushbizin as well. And interestingly, the late Lubavitcher Rebbe on Sukkot would talk about the Hasidic Ushbizin. And who are the Hasidic Ushbizin? They are the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mezerich, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, Rabbi Dov Ber, the Mittler Rebbe, then the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, Menachem Mendel, and then the Maharash, his son, Reb Shmuel, and then the Rebbe Rashab, he was the seventh one. And then you have Shmini Atzeret. I mean, he didn't really speak about it in this way. On the next day, Shmini Atzeret would be the previous Rebbe, and then comes the Simchat Torah, is the Rebbe himself, although he never spoke about it in that way. He always spoke about the first seven. So there you have again this idea of a set, you know, like spiritual people who have a certain power to connect the world with the divine and draw godliness into the world.
Seven is a very important spiritual number.
Certainly, it
has a significance.
Absolutely, we can see throughout the Torah, we can the 7 days of creation, Shabbat is the seventh day, the 7 years of the Shemitah, seven times seven, making the Jubilee.
That's right.
But isn't the Jubilee year the 450th?
Yes, Yovel. So there's seven times seven, and then the 50th day, the year after that, and the same with Shavuot, the seven times seven, and then the 50th. That's
But not three.
Three is also significant.
For what reason?
Listen, three is significant when you consider the giving of the Torah. The giving of the Torah.
Yeah.
So the Talmud says in Tractate Shabbat, where it talks about the giving of the Torah, it says, a triple Torah, Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, was given to a triple people, Kohanim, Nevi'im, Israel, on the third month, Nisan Iyar Sivan, on the third day. Now, it wasn't given on the third of Sivan, but God said, be ready for 3 days. They had to prepare for 3 days before the giving of the Torah, not come, not be intimate with their spouse, and be ready for the giving of the Torah. And who managed the giving of the Torah? Moses, who was a third child. There was Aaron, Miriam, and Moses. So, all these numbers, three.
And putting on a mezuzah, don't we do three palms down?
That's a good point. The mezuzah at the bottom of the top third. So if you're trying to work out where the mezuzah is, there's the thirds of the door, and then near the bottom of the top third, that's where the mezuzah is supposed to be.
And is also the minimum amount of Torahs in the scrolls in the bema? In the ark?
Well, no. I mean, if you've only got
five.
One. Yeah, but you might only have one.
Oh, okay,
there are many smaller congregations, but they only have one. You know, a Chabad house in some.
Thank you. See you again.
In some little suburb somewhere. You know, might just have one Torah scroll for the moment. Yeah. So the point about three is that, as discussed by the Rebbe in connection with the threes and the giving of the Torah, you have God, the world, and then drawing them together. You see, so there's existence, God, and then the resolution, of those two different poles, if you like.
It's really dialectic.
Yes, absolutely. Hegel lives again in a transformed version. All right, so that's this first little passage, which comes from Zohar Chadash. And so following the theme of creation, we have another passage, Asher bara Elokim la'asot. Now, if you look at the page of the Torah, you've got the little paragraph in the middle, in the Hebrew, Vayechulu Hashemayim Ba'aretz. This is what we say on Friday night.
Yes.
Do you see, Alan? Yom HaShishi, right? You wanted teaching on
Kiddush HaShishi.
Yom HaShishi Vayechulu Hashemayim. What does that spell, the initial letters?
Vav, Hey.
Yom.
Yom. Yud, Vav, Hey, Vav.
Yud.
Yom. Hey, Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey.
Yes.
I jumped.
The divine name.
Yeah.
The sacred name of God.
So where are we? Uncompleted?
Yom HaShishi. We're looking at the Hebrew. Yom HaShishi Vayechulu Hashemayim.
Yes.
Although they don't belong to the same sentence.
No, they're not in the same sentence. But you can't see that. Oh, well, you can. There's a space in the Torah. But so there's Yom HaShishi, space, and then Vayechulu Hashemayim.
Yeah.
We see that?
Yes.
So, like paragraph in the Torah. So, Yud and Hey and Vav and Hey. That's the beginning of Kiddush. Yom HaShishi, Vayechulu Hashemayim Ba'aretz, V'chol Tzva'am. And it continues. And then this passage ends. Mikol melachto kibo shabbat, because on this day God rested. Would you like to read it, Saul?
Vayechal Elohim biyom ha-shviyi melachto asher asah, vayishbot biyom ha-shviyi mikol melachto asher asah, vayivarech Elohim mitim ha-shviyi v'kadesh oto, kibo shabbat mikol melachto asher bara Elohim la'asot.
Right. Okay. So that's this statement that God, the heavens, it was the sixth day. It was evening and it was morning, then it was the sixth day, and then the heaven and the earth were completed and all their hosts. And God completed the work of creation by making the seventh day, which is Shabbat. This is the day on which he rested mikol melachto, from all his work. Now, just the last four words, Asher bara Elohim la'asot. Shaul, how would you translate that?
That God created to do.
It's a very...
Yes, exactly. It's not straightforward.
It isn't.
It's a mysterious statement.
Yeah. Asher bara, as he created, and then again,
to do. To make,
yeah.
Where the he says to function here.
So how do we unravel this?
Okay, so this is what the Zohar comments on. Okay, Alan, would you like to read Rabbi Yitzchak said? So we go back to the Zohar text on page 144.
Which God had created to do. Rabbi Yitzchak said, when all the work creation had been completed, God blessed them, each creation, and prepared them for fulfilling their allotted tasks in the world. He commanded each and every one of them never to change what which it had been prepared for its appointed task. He further commanded each and every one of them to produce its proper offspring. For them onwards, for all times, this is the meaning of the verse, which God had created to do. What does to do mean? To bring forth and produce according to its own time.
Now, this is a very interesting idea. The la'asot means to do, that everything is created not as something static. It's created as something dynamic. And it has a purpose and a function. And that's why it's created, and it has to carry out that function. Now, part of its function is to reproduce. But whatever else is its function, that's what it has to do. And it's very interesting if you think about ourselves as people. You know, each one has our shlichut, as the way it's put. Each one has our purpose given to us by God to be in this particular moment in history and living in the place where we happen to be living and surrounded by all the different circumstances which surround us, and in that situation to do what has to be done. And that's the last sort. And that's our connection with the very beginning of creation. It's a remarkable concept.
It is indeed. Yeah.
That means that the job of creation is never...
It's never ending.
It's ongoing. Yes. All the time.
As the advisors on, business strategy and timekeeping at the Shluchim conference just now, there was a very interesting piece given on, timekeeping and organizing a day, and how when you've got 1,000 different pieces of responsibility, how to keep it all organized. So one of the little epithets, the road to success is under construction.
Good.
Yes, you have to work at it. Okay, now the next passage actually relates to what we've just read, which is no doubt why our editor put them together. So we're going to have to take from the end of the first booklet.
And it carries on the first booklet at the end on page 2, because remember you photocopy.
On page.
Yeah, the second page. You have the cover page, and on the back of the cover page is 145. And the last page.
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
Oh, you're right. Okay, but you're absolutely right. But in fact, the new Choveret, I didn't realize that, and the new Choveret begins with page 145.
Oh, okay.
So you've got a choice.
Okay.
We have a choice. Okay, so would you like to begin the dynamics? Now, let's first look at this in the Hebrew, 2 verse 4. Let's go back to the Hebrew. So the Hebrew, if we're looking, Ele Toldot HaShemayim. Yes, would you like to read that, please? Just that verse, Ele Toldot.
Ele Toldot HaShemayim V'Haaretz V'Avram.
Behibaram.
Behibaram, B'Yom Asot.
Hashem Elokim.
Elokim Eretz.
Right, that's easier to translate, hopefully.
Yes.
Can you translate?
Well, these are the products of the heaven and the earth, which were created on the day that God made earth and heaven.
Right, okay, the translator here, Arya Kaplan.
Chronicles, it should be, isn't it? Toldot.
It could be Toldot.
Chronic what?
Well, he writes Chronicles. Okay, these are the Chronicles. But the word Behibaram, when they were created. All right. Look, you can't notice that the Hebrew has got a little hey.
Yes.
Behibaram. That in the Torah,
yes,
there's no
that?
Pointing, but there is a little hey.
So why is that?
That's all right. Well, we may discover something about that. Let's see. Okay. Would you like to read the translation, the dynamics of creation, since you only had one verse in Hebrew?
The dynamics of creation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. These are the products of the heaven and the earth.
Right.
Which we're, Rabbi Elazar said, the entire universe and all of its descendants were created in one moment, in one hour, in one day, as it is written. These are the products of the heaven and the earth, which were created on the day that God made earth and heaven. On the very same day and at the very same hour, at the self same moment, everything was created.
Right. So okay. Everything was there in that first moment of creation, that first day of creation. Everything is there. All future descendants. everything that will ever come to be.
And so it wasn't like one day this, one day that, as
well,
it's called.
Now this is an interesting thing. So there is the idea that at the beginning everything was created, then it gradually emerged. On the first day came light, and the second day this, and the third day that, until on the sixth day Adam. So everything was in potential, and then was revealed step by step in the 6 days, and then was further revealed through the generations of time, through the millennia. And so there's...
So when you say everything was created, then all the souls in the world today already created
everything
at that,
yes,
that point.
Yes.
So we are part of this very first...
Yes, yes, you
each
see.
Each and every one of us.
In fact, it says that God considered the souls of the righteous before he embarked on creation. So there's a sense in which our souls, connected as they are with the souls of the righteous, are there before creation. The Torah is there before creation.
So the idea of Tzimtzum, how is it related to all of that?
Tzimtzum, you see, in the writings of the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe that was discussed last Monday, Tzimtzum is a whole parsha. You know, it's many, many different dimensions of existence of there before Tzimtzum, after Tzimtzum, different stages of Tzimtzum. Here we're actually reaching the point.
So this is before Tzimtzum, all this.
I would say this is after Tzimtzum.
After.
This is when we're. Don't get lost.
No, it should be after. I'm just asking to make sure.
Yeah. So.
But was this concept of Tzimtzum always there, or this is something that came up with later on?
Rabbi Isaac Luria taught the concept of Tzimtzum in the 16th century.
But
now before him.
Yes.
In the Zohar, there are references to something which he then explained as Tzimtzum. Now, to what extent other people understood it as Tzimtzum in the way that we understand it after he taught it, it's a little bit like, you know, Harvey discovered the circulation of the blood. Now, other people also saw that the heart was beating and that the blood moved, you know, that if you can cut certain arteries, the blood spurts out. But to put it all together and say, oh, the blood is circulating, the heart is a pump which is pumping the blood around the body, people in the West had not put two and two together. In the Zohar, incidentally, it does speak about the circulation of the blood. It does talk about the movement of the blood around the body and the tefeka, the liver, the pulsating of the heart. So, when Rabbi Isaac Luria looks at the Zohar and says this means that there is this concept of Tzimtzum, and he explained the image of Tzimtzum, and it's a diagram that his student Rabbi Chaim Vital drew, which I've often shown, you know, the circle, everything withdrawn, and kind of veiling, and then a shaft of light coming into the middle. So. But this stage of this one day, I believe, is after the Tzimtzum, and it's the beginning of the actual process. In fact, it's in the world of Tikkun. Because before this world described in the Torah, which begins with the letter Bet, Bereshit, there is an earlier stage, which is the world of the breaking of the vessels.
Shvirat HaKelim, right.
The breaking of the vessels. Mm. Now, that is an earlier stage of spiritual intensity, which doesn't lead to physical existence. But now it's talking about the world of Tikkun leading to our physical existence, and here is this process. Now, this is a very interesting idea, that everything was there, and afterwards, at a later stage, the last line, Henders, rereading it, they were revealed each creation's appropriate day, on each of the days of creation, and then on, I would say, you know, on through existence, everything is revealed, all the things that were already built in. As the commentator says, whatever would be produced in the future was already built into creation. Now this links to something in Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Fathers, says that in the 6 days of creation, certain crucial things were created just at the end, Bein Hashmashot, just at in the twilight of the sixth day, just at the end of the 6 days of creation, such as the mouth of the donkey that spoke to Bilam in last week's Sedra, or the opening in the earth which swallowed up Korach and his followers in the Sedra previously. So, in other words, or two Sedras previously, that miracles are somehow wired in to existence. Obviously, all the technology that we have is there right away from the very beginning of creation. All the possibilities that we have with the internet or communication or anything else is part of existence from the very beginning. It's built into existence. So the Rambam considers this in the Guide for the Perplexed. And he says, this is a remarkable idea. He says, I must affirm that God can suspend nature whenever he wants. However, it's a very interesting idea. Like the Rambam in Guide for the Perplexed, it's as if the Rambam is writing sometimes in a very personal way. He's not writing the book for publication. He's writing it as a long letter to a very close student of his. And later it was seen that this was, he agreed to have it copied more and it was translated into Hebrew from the Arabic. But at the beginning, it was just a personal missive to a very beloved pupil. So he said, but a wonderful idea strikes me, that all miracles are actually built into existence at the very beginning. And when God created the world, all those miracles are there, just ready to be revealed at the right moment. The crossing of the Red Sea, the splitting of the sea, the manna, the rock of Miriam, everything, whatever it might be. It's all there in existence. And so existence has this multiple potential of goodness. Right up to the time of the Messiah, we could say, when Isaiah says, a child will be able to play with a scorpion and the scorpion won't sting it, or with a viper. Yes, these beautiful passages in Isaiah, which there's discussion, you know, this is speaking metaphorically about warring nations. But no, this way of looking at it, that's in fact the way that existence was created. And that is something that will ultimately be revealed about existence, just as electricity was all the time there. And there was a certain point when this aspect of electricity was discovered, that aspect of this, and then finally you have the electronic systems that surround us at every step of our life. So it's all there from the very beginning of creation.
Because it's all energy, isn't it?
It's all energy, and it's all so part of God's. Now, here we have a very interesting thing in the Kabbalah. Machshava ha-kaduma da-adam kadmon. The original thought of primeval man. And that refers to, not to man, but to God. And primeval man means a certain level of Godhead, of the God's awareness of existence and his awareness of everything, absolutely everything. Miresh kol dargin, from the highest of all levels, ad sof kol dargin, to the lowest of all levels. It's all there in the original thought of Adam Kadmon, which in Chabad texts, they write things with abbreviations. So, Machshava HaKaduma Da'ak. Ak is Adam Kadmon. So, if someone comes back to their car, they've been on a shopping expedition in the West End or to an art gallery or something, and they come back and there is Rahman and Itzlan, may God save us, a yellow clamp around the wheel of the car. So one way of
accepting
this situation is saying, you know what? This was there in the Machshava HaKadumah, the original thought of primeval. That before the world was created, it was decided that on this day, my car will have this happen.
Does it include all our sins? No, this is up to us, isn't it?
It's up to us, but it's still there.
You're right, isn't it?
It's all mapped out.
The temptation is there, yes.
The fact that it's mapped out doesn't impel us to do the sin.
We could have turned somewhere else into a different direction, yeah. Hmm. Somebody else will take that sin. Not necessarily.
Well, you see, it could be that if we didn't do the sin, the original map will be changed. Because it's all about time anyway.
Would it be changed, or would it just be there? Because the map is not unidirectional, just one path. Isn't it potential? If you have a map, you can go any road.
Well, that's an interesting
question. But if you want to go from here to there, you're not going to go normally there.
But the project will still be completed.
Whichever way you
go,
that's what I'm saying. By somebody else. Well, is that sin part of the project, or is it the potential that's there?
You know, in a certain way, you know, the sins that we've committed are part of the project.
Yeah. And
the sins
we have.
Because now it's up to us to recognize that and to repent or take the right kind of action and do what needs to be done. So the sin that is there, that's already happened, that's like the chessboard as it faces us and the next move is ours. The sin that we haven't yet done, that's our choice.
Yes.
So when I was at school, my teacher used to cane me at the first day of school for the sins I was going to do.
How he was horrible. How horrible.
Sadists.
Did they really do it?
But it sounds like a rabbi, you know.
But you know the story about my father and me. And this is going back to the idea that it's all there from the beginning. I don't know how long before, but a year or two before this business with this madness started. And he kind of pushed me away. Mm. And because I took my mother, I dreamt, and it was a very vivid dream. And it kind of stuck in my mind until today, so clearly. I was going into the house, but it was slightly different, where he was, and I opened the door. And as I walked in, he looked at me and looked very severe, and I fell on my face, absolutely flat out, and he didn't show emotion, he didn't pick me up, it was like...
How old were you?
Oh, this was a year or two before all this happened.
Right, just now.
Just now. And I remember walking with that in my mind for a while and thinking, what? I mean, it was so vivid and it was so real, and there are some dreams that I have a sense that the premonition of something to happen. Mm. But I didn't realize what turn it would take. But it was bitter, and there was no way of reconciling with that fall. Mm. This is the feeling when I got out of the dream was. And lo and behold, it happened that way. Because from that moment on, I think probably within a month or two, it was...
Well, I mean, one, you know, you could see that is in a sense preparing you for what is happening.
Is that, that's interesting. Yes.
You know, but that you should be able to face it, that this terrible change is going to take place. And now it's a matter of you facing it, and the dream is there to help you face it.
Sorry.
Yeah, this is very, very meaningful. Okay, let's take this last paragraph on this page 145, where we come to this hay. The following extract, Michael, would you like to take this, please? The following extract, it's on page 145, do you have that? The
following extract from Zohar explains why the letter hay of the Hebrew is smaller than the other letters of the